Welcome to Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz, the only program willing to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. Your host and guide to victory over communism is one of the nation's most experienced national security journalists, Bill Gertz, who uses unique facts, pinpoint analysis, and exclusive interviews to identify and counter today's destructive communist ideologies. Now, Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.
Welcome to the podcast. This episode marks the beginning of Season 3 of the VOC podcast that has been going strong now for 2 years, and I believe it's beginning to have a major impact. I've begun noticing how people in public circles seem less reluctant than in the past to call out Marxism-Leninism when they see it as a serious ideological challenge. This ideology is something people urgently need to understand, and more importantly, need to understand its deceptions and fallacies. This task is urgent because in our increasingly secularized world, truth and God-centered values are literally under assault. If not from atheists and materialists, certainly from the Chinese communists and American Marxists. That's the focus of the podcast, ideology, Chinese Marxism-Leninism, and what I call American neo-Marxism. As I always emphasize, the podcast is not about people. It's about ideology. People have the freedom to believe in whatever they choose. My goal is to help educate Americans and the people of the world to these destructive ideologies, and also to offer a real-world vision for how to solve the problems communism seeks to resolve, but will never be able to do so because of its lack of truth and values. In this latest episode, I explore in detail the most recent views on ideology by the Chinese Communist Party. It is taken directly from the party's journal known as Chou Shi, which translates ironically into seeking truth. The journal is the leading repository of official communist ideology published bimonthly by the Central Party School and the Central Committee. Its headquarters are in Beijing. Until very recently, there were no English language versions of this journal, only in Chinese. Now, however, Chou Shi has begun publishing all recent editions that I find provide a wealth of information on Chinese communist beliefs, goals, and, significantly, its actions. The March 3rd, Chou Shi published a major article called Implementing the Guiding Principles of the Central Conference on Work Relating to Foreign Affairs and Breaking New Ground in Major Country Diplomacy with Chinese Characteristics. This is the lengthy document produced in December 2023 by a party unit studying foreign affairs, where Supreme Party leader Xi Jinping set a new course for Chinese international affairs. You can find this document on the Chou Shi website, but you won't have to wade through its North Korean communist-style propaganda. I've already done that, and I'm giving you the key points that the document makes in dropping all illusions about China limiting its ideological aggression to the Chinese people. The CCP is on the march ideologically and is seeking to dominate the world under Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics for the new era, that era being the rule of Xi Jinping. The report also reveals CCP views on the current international situation and plans for the future. As during the reign of Soviet communism, Xi believes the correlation of forces in the world is shifting dramatically in the CCP's favor. I say the CCP and not China out of respect for the Chinese people, the majority of whom despise communism and want to be rid of its corrupt and inhuman grip. The first element we need to understand is that Xi is a diehard communist, and his goal for the entire world, if not for the entire planet, to be placed under Chinese communist ideology. The CCP is now calling upon the party to, quote, act with a stronger sense of historical responsibility, end quote, and to create a more favorable international environment and provide more solid strategic support for building China into a great modern socialist country in all aspects and advancing the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation on all fronts through what they call the Chinese path to modernization. The article puts into official context a CCP white paper called A Global Community of Shared Future. This is China's proposals and actions that was made public in September 26, 2023. The paper outlines the Marxist-Leninist idea and practice of creating a global community with a shared future. I'll repeat that as it is key to understanding current Chinese communist ideology and its designs for global control. The euphemism is a global communism with a shared future. Sounds nice, but it is not. The goal of this dystopian ideology is to spread the doctrine and practice of Marxism-Leninism that Xi Jinping believes it, with fanatical ferocity, to be truth. It is not the truth. It is an outdated European anti-capitalist screed that has failed wherever it was imposed, often with disastrous consequences for the people its system controls, leading to mass death and horrible denials of fundamental rights and freedoms. Applying Xi's ideology to diplomacy is simply a smokescreen for the expansion of Chinese communist power around the world. 10 points were presented in this paper, and I'll focus on the two most important. First is Xi Jinping's notion of, quote, advocating the building of a community with a shared future for mankind. The second is showing the way in reforming the international system in order. The last of the 10 points lists strengthening the centralized unified leadership of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, without which the other two key points will never be realized. The report describes Xi's ideology as a shining example of applying the basic tenets of Marxism to the practice of China's global activities, with bits of traditional Chinese culture thrown in an attempt to hide communism's European roots. This nightmarish scenario of a world under Chinese communism with a shared future for mankind stands as the bright banner, Xi Jinping said. Chuo Xi tries to explain this goal is the result of Xi's brilliance, using terms like his broad strategic insight, extraordinary political wisdom, and deep commitment to the world as a leader of the majority party of a majority country. Thus, we hear it is given that Xi is the sole power to understand the trends and laws governing the evolution of human society. According to the report, Xi ingeniously put forth the vision of building a community with a shared future for mankind. Only the dictator and supreme leader has come to know what the report said is the right course for the entire world, which is said to be at a historical inflection point. I will quote verbatim a section of the report here to give you a sense of how the CCP is using its revitalized brand of communism to take over the world. It begins, quote, "Building a community with a shared future for mankind is the core tenet of Xi Jinping's thought on diplomacy. It reflects the high consistency of the CCP's founding aspiration and mission with the trend of our times and embodies the broadest common expectations of people around the globe for a better world. With tremendous theoretical value and far-reaching historical significance, this vision is gaining increasingly strong influence, vitality, and appeal," end quote. So, according to the CCP, its communist ideology still faces capitalist reactionary forces around the world that are described as high winds and choppy waters. The party falsely believes its newfound economic power, gained through theft and trickery from the West, has made it a responsible world leader with greater international appeal. In reality, people around the world are waking up to the reality of an economically powerful communist state that is seeking to transform the current system built on individual rights and freedoms into a one-party dictatorship that seeks total control and which lacks all morality, as the term has been known for generations, as distinguishing good from evil under God-centered values. The CCP has removed all God-centered morality from its ideology and actions that are specifically designed to advance global communism to what it falsely believes is the final scientifically mandated goal of history. The report insists that China is a socialist country led by the CCP and that its ideology should no longer be hidden under the previous policy to avoid provoking a global backlash. Using terms like progressive and fairness and justice, the CCP is deceiving the world about its true aims and ambitions. The CCP, according to the report, is a Marxist party armed with theories of dialectical and historical materialism, and its understandings and actions are based on applying the ideology to the world situation, which the party describes as a new period of turbulence and transformation. For the party, the turbulence is a reflection of Marx's idea of struggle producing progress. On transformation, the CCP is advancing its agenda around the world in a clear and systematic way. Unlike the Biden administration that believes coexistence with communist China is acceptable, Chinese ideology asserts that there can be no coexistence between the communist world and its capitalist counterpart. Despite the turbulence, the CCP believes the overall direction of human development and progress will not change the overall dynamics of world history moving forward amid twists and turns, and it will not change. And the overall trend toward the shared future of the international community also is not going to change. The CCP's goal is stated in the report as building an open, inclusive, quote, clean, beautiful world of lasting peace, universal security, and shared prosperity. This will be achieved by promoting global governance, a euphemism for Chinese communist ideological control. The four CCP programs are mentioned here. They are the Belt and Road Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, the Global Security Initiative, and the Global Civilization Initiative. All these programs are nothing more than deceptions for imposing Chinese communism globally. The party also talks of Chinese modernization. This is another euphemism for CCP global dominance, hegemony, and absolute power politics. The most recent CCP journal article is not as explicit in listing its Marxist-Leninist goals. You can find that in a November 2023 Qioshi article on the five characteristics of Chinese modernization. This article states that Karl Marx promoted his theories of historical materialism to liberate and develop productive forces, eliminate exploitation and polarization, and ultimately realize common prosperity. Instead, communist states did not eliminate exploitation and did not produce common prosperity. Prosperity has been limited to those members of the CCP. The common prosperity falsehood has been preached since Mao took power in 1949, also under Deng Xiaoping, who said it was the essence of socialism. And now Xi Jinping is the long-term task of the party, meaning it will never be achieved as long as communism is the guiding ideology of the party. Here, the journal describes Marxism as linking material and cultural advancements in a dialectical unity, and quotes Lenin as saying communism cannot be built without a fund of knowledge, technology, and culture. Socialism is the primary stage of capitalism, and socialist societies are ones that are developed in all respect, according to the Chinese. But socialism will never achieve communism's utopian ideal of a global community of shared future for all people because it can't solve the problems of human nature by imposing its dictatorial atheist system. As I'll show you in the counterproposal section, the solutions communism advocates can only be achieved in fully understanding God, His creation, and reconnecting men and women to the ultimate source of the universe. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to gofundme.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is the counterproposal section that offers a unique Judeo-Christian worldview that goes way beyond anti-communism. It strikes at the heart of Marxism-Leninism because it presents ideas and actions that, if adopted, can fundamentally alter the world that we live in. I firmly believe that. The VOC worldview is based on the teachings of the late Reverend Sun Myung-moon, who understood firsthand the realities and truth of communism. For his preaching, he was imprisoned in a North Korean concentration camp and would have died there were it not for the U.S.-led United Nations forces that liberated the camp at Hung Nam during the Korean War. Reverend Moon, in the late 60s, produced what are called the Divine Principles that offer a new understanding of the nature of God, the universe, and humankind that will eventually be recognized as spiritually revolutionary. The VOC worldview argues that communism as an ideology will ultimately be defeated by a superior ideology based on God's truth and containing elements of both science and religion. Promoting and strengthening understandings of God and his relationship to people are the key to defeating communism. That's because the core tenets of the ideologies of communism and Marxism are based on a denial of the existence of God. By understanding God, godlessness and the crimes against humanity perpetrated by communism will be effectively overcome. One of the most fundamental elements of this understanding is how the family is more than a core element of society. The God-centered family, according to the VOC worldview, is in fact a deeply spiritual institution. In earlier episodes, I've talked about the two dimensions of human life, the physical and spiritual self. In our lives, we are continuously living in both realms, the spiritual and the physical worlds. Our spiritual selves are joined with our physical bodies until the physical body separates from the spiritual self at the time of physical death. At that point, the spiritual self becomes an independent being and lives on in the spiritual world for eternity. This is completely at odds with the atheist and materialist view of life espoused by Marxists and communists, who view humankind as limited solely by the physical realm and no different than animals. Once we clearly know this truth about the nature of life, communism will cease to be of interest to anybody. So, I am now going to address the growth of the spiritual self. As I mentioned, humans' earthly life is the primary opportunity for the spiritual growth or maturity to perfection. But what is the mechanism of this spiritual growth? To learn something about the principles of spiritual growth, first consider the process of physical growth. The physical body, like the physical body of any other living thing, requires a period of growth to reach maturity. During this growth period, certain elements are consumed by the body. They include air and sunlight from above, as well as food and water. In the same way, the spiritual self also needs to pass through a growth period in order to achieve maturity. Each of us needs to know just what sort of elements are needed for our spirit to grow. In general, individuals really need truth and love from their parent, that's God. These correspond to air and sunlight in the physical growth process. That is, they are given freely from outside the individual. We call these spiritual elements life elements. God is the ultimate source of all life elements, and we receive them through our parents and other parental figures. Just as physical food is essential for growth of the physical body, the development of the spirit also requires a similar kind of spiritual food. This is called the vitality element. It is generated by our own physical bodies, when we practice truth and love in our daily lives. In other words, the spiritual self must have give-and-take action with God by receiving God's truth and love, and then must pass on these elements of inspiration to the physical body. The physical body receives the message and obeys it and practices truth and love of God in a real life. In this way, the physical self can return abundant vitality elements to the spiritual self, and that's the way the spirit grows. Humans got to receive God's truth and love while on earth and practice it. In this way, humans become an embodiment of truth and love of God. That is the only way one's spiritual self can grow to full maturity. Humans must practice God's greatest commandment to love God and fellow people. This alone can provide for the eternal well-being of an individual. This is the important purpose of the physical stage of life. We need to realize that the material well-being of the physical body is actually of secondary importance when compared to our proper spiritual development. When a person is totally blind to the reality of God and His truth and love, and the lives of a selfish and greedy lives a selfish and greedy life on earth, that person has completely denied the growth of the spiritual self. In the words of Jesus, He said, "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul?" In the VOC worldview, every action of a person has an eternal impact. What each of us does has an eternal effect on our spiritual well-being. That is reflected in the Bible saying, "You shall reap what you sow." Whatever situation a person may encounter, it does no good to blame others. Humans have no one to blame but themselves, and each person has to take responsibility to live a good and moral life. Communism is out to destroy both family and religion. On the surface, communism appears to be asking people to sacrifice themselves for an unselfish ideal. It would then seem to be spiritually beneficial to humans. This, however, is extremely misleading. In reality, communism stifles human spiritual development. It denies the existence of God and denies God's truth and love. The greatest injury done by communism is that it totally blocks out humankind's spiritual life by teaching that there's no God and no eternal spirit. Instead of love and sacrifice, the essence of life becomes hate and resentments. If you study Marxist literature, it becomes clear that at the very core of Marxism is resentment. To promote the dialectic, the ideology of Marxism promotes hatred, and this hate withers and destroys the human spirit. Here again, a strong contrast can be made with the communist view. Communism denies the most sacred institution of all, the family, thus denying humans the experience of the practice of love. By breaking apart families and encouraging children to betray their parents, they have engendered such hatred and animosity that millions of people have come to deny their eternal life and, in a sense, become kind of stillborn into an eternal world of not love. This is the worst crime which the God-denying ideology of communism commits against humanity. Communism destroys the family. This is a point that Marx declared very clearly in the Communist Manifesto. Bright children are routinely separated from parents. They are taught that the party and the state are more important than their parents. Prosecuting one's parents for ideological crimes is regarded as heroic action in communist states like China and North Korea. Chinese propaganda glorifies a youth who turned his parents into security police for stealing a small amount of rice because they were starving. The parents were executed, and statues were raised to the young child as an exemplar of communist morality. Consider the words of Richard Wurmbrand, who spent 17 years in a prison in Romania. He said, "I came to understand the power of evil when I spent the time in prison. I began to see that there must be a devil because it would be impossible for people to treat other people the way that I saw people treat people in prison in Romania." Something happens when people are taught to hate in that way. They become capable of doing anything to advance their cause. State interest becomes the moral justification for their crimes. Ultimately, the love of God is cut off and by ethical ideals becomes motivated by hatred. The result is a spiritual death. In the words of Jesus, "Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. That's from Matthew 10:28. This is what communism does. The blanket denial of spirituality can be compared to a blackout. Communism represents a spiritual blackout which today affects billions of lives. It denies the eternal well-being of people, besides the physical atrocities which have destroyed tens of millions of people. Communism has ruined the eternal lives of billions more. This is why communism is the worst crime ever perpetrated against humanity. Here we find the reason why. In the name of God and in the name of humanity, communism needs to be stopped. This is the fundamental concern of the VOC worldview. When we see that there is a philosophy today that is destroying the spiritual dimension of the human being, then we must stand up. We have to oppose it. We have to stop it. Right now, the most serious ideological threat is the danger posed by Chinese communism. Xi Jinping has made clear his goal is nothing short of world domination under communist ideology. To achieve that, the Chinese communists are aggressively working to undermine, weaken, and ultimately destroy the United States, the main impediment to Chinese world domination. Our ideological fight cannot be satisfied by saying, well, we're going to stay where we are. They can have their part of the world. We can have our part. We don't need to worry about it. If we have real compassion, if we really feel that all the people on this earth are brothers and sisters, and if we really feel we have an eternal life, then we can't allow millions of people to die spiritually because of this false ideology. Compassion calls us to action. Today, our nation and the world are beset with major problems that won't be solved by either the current communist or Marxist ideologies or by the increasingly secular and humanist ideology that's dominating free societies. I'll close out here with a section of the podcast with comments from Hak Jahan Moon, the wife of the late Reverend Sun Myung Moon. She said recently that she and her husband directly experienced the destructive nature of militant communism, and as a result, they're committed to preventing the spread of that system to the world. At the same time, both recognize that the free world is in a state of moral and spiritual decline. The foundations of faith, family, and freedom in liberal democratic societies are not healthy. The couple has worked tirelessly to find a balance between communism and free world ideologies by offering a vision for a solution to current world problems. This is the idea of creating a God-centered counter to Xi Jinping's dark vision of a communist-dominated world. This God-centered counter to Chinese communism advocates creation of a world based on values of interdependence, mutual prosperity, and universally shared values. These ideas can reshape the world into a truly ideal society, nation, and ultimately world. Dreams and ideals alone are not enough to change the world. We need procedures, strategies, and policies based on those dreams and visions that can produce a concrete reality. The followers of Karl Marx have been actively committed to changing the world through a conflict-based dialectical analysis. In contrast, the social vision promoted by the VOC worldview is built on complementary and mutual participation. Those who cherish this alternative social vision for the future need to be similarly and even more vigorously committed to changing the world. As Reverend Moon stated, humanity wants a world of interdependence, mutual prosperity, and universally shared values because this is a reflection of God's ideal kingdom. It is not a world where we can live alone. No individual can create such a world. Whatever we talk about I, there must also be my partner. This should not remain as a concept, but needs to be applied to real life. In light of this passage, it can be seen that mutuality is at the heart of these social ideals and practices. Since the passage refers to God's ideal kingdom, we can also recognize that such mutuality is not only within the human realm, but it's the starting point and mutuality between God and human beings. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz. Featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
Hi, this is Bill Gertz. I wanted to talk to you briefly about my latest book. It's called Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. This is the most important book you can read to fully understand the threat posed by the Chinese Communist government. I urge you to get a copy today. It can be found at my website, The Gertz File, that's gertzfile.com, or at the book site called deceivingthesky.com.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. For the news portion, I'm going to discuss an important article that appeared in the online newsletter The Wire China, which is headed by former New York Times reporter David Barboza. Barboza interviewed someone who I regard as one of the most important figures in current Chinese communist ideology. She is Tsai Shia, a former CCP insider turned dissident. I've mentioned her work in the past because she is one of the most important voices on the subject of Chinese communist ideology, having worked inside the Central Party School. That's the school in charge of the journal Qiaoxia that I mentioned in the first part of the podcast. Tsai Shia was a professor of political science at the Central Party School between 98 and 2012. In late 2020, after her sharp critiques of the party and Supreme Leader Xi Jinping began circulating online, she was expelled from the Communist Party. In one talk that leaked online, she said, "This party is a political zombie." By that time, though, she was already residing in the United States, where she remains today, living in exile as a political commentator and dissident. Tsai Shia was born into a family of military officers who were members of the Chinese Communist Party. She was educated by the party and grew up in a military base. Also, she grew up during the Cultural Revolution, and that disrupted her studies, so she joined the People's Liberation Army. After the Cultural Revolution ended in 1976, she returned to civilian work. After the Tiananmen Massacre in 89, the entire Chinese Communist Party panicked, she said. They didn't know what to do. The party sought to better deal with party members and cadres, how to instruct them. The party school was put in charge of that project. The Central Party School is first and foremost the highest school of the Communist Party of China. This school is responsible for teaching and training to all Chinese leaders, including governors and ministers, every person, and all of the senior military people. The teaching environment and atmosphere at the party school was different from other periods, and the impact on students also changes from time to time. For example, in the late 70s and early 80s, after the Cultural Revolution, Hu Yaobang, the general secretary of the Communist Party during the 80s, was the executive vice president of the party school. Although he was in the party school for a short time, his influence was far-reaching. From the 80s to the 90s, the school spirit was to emancipate the mind and seek truth from facts, to discuss, study, and solve problems. This is according to Tsai Shia. During that period, the party school was the most open-minded institution within the Communist Party of China. Hu Yaobang had established an ethos of free thought and innovative inquiry within the Central Party School. And it was these innovative approaches to research that were carried on through Jiang Zemin and Hu Jintao. Before Hu Jintao became general secretary, he was president of the party school. All of that changed under Xi Jinping, a diehard communist who ordered the facility to fall in line with the party's central committee. That's the body that really controls the entire 1.4 billion Chinese people. All members of the party school were forbidden from saying anything that contradicted the central committee. And Xi took his threats to the faculty. He said no one could speak out of line of the central committee. And if you felt wrong, you just had to figure out how to live with it. Xi Jinping changed the party school under the Chinese saying, "Eat the meal and smash the pot." It means that if you eat the meal that the party provides you, you can't go and break its pots. She said it first to threaten faculty at the school. Then, after he became general secretary of the party, he no longer held the position of president of the party school. So from 2013 on, he completely reversed party ideology in China. He believes the ideology has to be brandished and that there must be struggle under Marxism's dialectic. It was she who imposed the seven don't talk abouts to the universities and the CCP. They include don't talk about the party's mistakes, that is, the murders of 60 million Chinese under Mao. Don't talk about anything she believes is false history. Don't talk about constitutional government or democracy. This brought about a new communist leftism that destroyed the modest relaxation over controls of the party and the population. Tsai Xi called it a shift to the left. As Tsai put it, since Xi Jinping took power, the ideology and the mindset of the entire CCP went backwards, and leftist notions started making a comeback. That's the main backdrop for changes at the party school. When the party renewed its fervor of Marxism-Leninism under Xi, the party school was forced to follow suit. Anyone who wants to be promoted in the communist system must go through this school. The Chinese Communist Party documents stipulate that how you are promoted to the next level. If you don't go to the party school, you can't be promoted. This reflects the enormous power of the faculty at the school and its lectures on the entire party. They influenced the thinking and the ideology. Tsai Sha said she broke with the CCP based on her military background and the fact that before Xi, the school was open and allowed freedom of thought. Losing that was more than she could stand. Tsai Xi first came on Xi's radar in 2016 when she supported the tycoon Ren Zhicheng, a Chinese property tycoon who was sentenced to 18 years in prison after openly criticizing the Communist Party. As Tsai Xi said, "The more you think about things, the more you come to recognize Xi Jinping's inner nature, his evil, and his darkness," she said, noting his role in covering up and mishandling the COVID-19 outbreak. Tsai Sha said that the CCP had changed radically under Xi and is no longer supporting the nation, and her outspokenness led to her ouster from the party. Since Xi Jinping came to power, he has changed the system at the top levels of the party. She noted that there were nine dragons guarding the water, reflected the distributed power within the Politburo Standing Committee. All power was in the Politburo Standing Committee. Xi Jinping now has all power in his hands. He has control over the party, the government, and the military all at the same time. And he advocates for strengthening the leadership of the party, which means strengthening his dictatorial role within the party. Again, so who is the central government? Who is the party? It's Xi Jinping. He's now an absolute dictator. Tsai Sha blames Hu Jintao, who was humiliated at the recent meeting as he was filmed being physically removed from the meeting, as a weak leader. So Xi Jinping reacted against this and now rules with an iron fist. He's ended the so-called democratic centralism of the CCP system. Tsai Sha says that the Communist Party is most afraid of people organizing, people it knows that if there is an organization, there will be power that contradicts that of the party. When people come to a place where there is an organization, the power will be very strong. It's a basic tenet of Marxism. Today, the state is completely under control of the CCP, and Xi has strengthened his control over all the private enterprise in order to gain their assets. His idea is that as long as you become stronger economically, you will make political demands, and then the market will become unstable. So his ideology of the current generation of rulers is that it is based on the violent revolution of Mao Zedong and Marx, the ideology of class struggle. It's deeply ingrained. Basic Communist Party concepts that after becoming economically strong, the people will demand political rights. So the party will be highly vigilant and use its dictatorial powers to crush the entrepreneurs and all freedom. Tsai Sha quoted Lenin as saying that an organization is the only weapon of the proletariat. If you are scattered, you cannot resist. He attached great importance to the organization of all communist parties, and Xi Jinping is afraid that businessmen are now going to organize. Now we're seeing a major crackdown by security organs and new spy hysteria all inside of China, going after foreigners, where foreigners are and Americans as well are being treated as spies, arrested, and prevented from leaving the country. It's a deep-seated idea in the Communist Party that all money that the entrepreneurs acquire was obtained through exploitation, i.e. capitalist exploitation. And this is the excuse the CCP is using whenever it confiscates wealth. Frankly, the party does not create wealth, but it will plunder other people's wealth. Marx's theory of surplus value is an argument that legitimizes stealing from the rich. Xi Jinping is doing just that. His theory has become the Communist Party's justification for stealing from the rich. At the Central Party School in the 90s, Tsai said that the theory had already been proven wrong. As she stated, there are two cornerstones of Marx's theory. One is the theory of surplus value, and the other is the dictatorship of the proletariat. In her mind, these two pillars have been overturned. So, is she a believer in Marxism? No, she's rejected the ideology. However, Xi Jinping hasn't reached this level of understanding. In his mind, he is completely accepting everything the propaganda has told him since childhood, that problems were the result of capitalist exploitation. And now Xi Jinping is telling the people in China that wealthy businessmen or those who are prosperous are all capitalists, and capital represents immorality. They have robbed you, and then he invokes common prosperity, even though it doesn't include the bottom rung of people in China at all. A lot of people at the bottom are still supporting him. He uses the populist argument to plunder. He wants to strike down the business tycoons. The country under Xi Jinping has become more repressive, and the party is less open. Reforms have been abandoned, and a move towards some form of democracy has disappeared. Yet Tsai Sha thinks there's hope for China, but a successful future will require pressure from the outside. Any country's democratization, in addition to internal factors, needs outside influence and pressure. Tsai believes that Samuel Huntington's idea of democracy transition will apply to China if there's outside pressure that can amplify the voices inside China urging the transition to a constitutional democracy. The outside world needs to play a significant role. If it doesn't, that internal pressure will always be defeated and deflated. You can't rise up if there isn't a spark. The inside is the spark. The outside is the air. If you have the spark, the outside has oxygen. For instance, if there's an event that acts as a fuse, it will start. So we have to truly realize the outside world in China matters today. The Chinese people are very smart. They're also hardworking, but they only get one source of information. So when you tear down the great firewall that's blocking information from reaching the Chinese people and let everyone know the truth, you will let them get information from different types of sources. You let them gather this wealth of information. Then and only then can one's thinking and field of vision be opened up. Only then can you really think through problems. Otherwise, they will be locked in a unitary source of information, and they will be swayed by one voice, the Chinese Communist Party. This argues why it's so urgent to wage information warfare in getting through to the people of China and get them the power to overthrow the Chinese Communist Party. I'll be right back with the interview portion after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, Just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to gofundme.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
Hi, friends. During the break, I'd like to briefly mention a little bit about my website, The Gertz File. It's gertzfile.com, and there you can find lots of information. I mentioned earlier my book, Deceiving the Sky. I also would like you to look at I, War, War and Peace in the Information Age, which was my previous book, and this is a really important look at information warfare and what we need to do to counter it. I also have information, further information about the podcast, as well as information about the Gertz File Investigative Reporting Project, and all of my stories linked to the Washington Times.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. For the interview portion, I'm joined now by Thomas Cromwell. Thomas is the author of The Triumph of Good, Divine Providence, The Cain-Abel Paradigm, and The End of Marxism. Thomas was born on a Christian communal farm in Shropshire, England. He moved to America at age 14, and he spent 25 years in the Middle East as a journalist, publisher, and peace builder, studying the monotheistic faiths in their homelands and working to promote an understanding among the diverse communities in the region. Thomas has traveled extensively throughout the communist world prior to the fall of the Soviet Union, an experience that gave him firsthand knowledge of life under Marxist regimes. His work and curiosity about human civilization have taken him to 130 countries so far. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the book. Give us an overview and what prompted you to write it.
Right. Well, essentially, the book tries to look at the sort of big picture of how communism fits within a historical process. And particularly, I look at the kind of ancient, age-old dynamic between Cain and Abel, the first sort of characters who appear prehistorically, but they appear clearly. One is a, jealous, resentful, bitter, irresponsible, and kills the other, his younger brother Abel, who's more faithful, obedient, and good. And this relationship really is a dynamic that runs all the way through history. And although obviously in the few minutes we have, I can only summarize that process, but it leads into the recent centuries, particularly becoming clear, I think, at the time of the French Revolution, where you have the impetus for change, the desire for change, but is carried out in a very bloodthirsty and brutal and violent way. In many respects, the French Revolution is foreshadowed of fascism and socialism and communism. And then 70 years later, Karl Marx and Engels, of course, put together the Communist Manifesto, which really is an ideological work which embodies Cain personality, Cain attitudes, and Cain behavior. People who have studied Marx recognize in him that type of kind of unpleasant character, bitter character, resentful character, always blaming others. And really, his whole ideology was built around his own personality and his own prejudices against society. So Marx, by sort of codifying Cain behavior into an ideology, provided the basis for what became the communist movement. Of course, Lenin added some features like the revolution, the need for a leading party, the dictatorship of the proletariat, and some elements like that to actually launch and carry out the Russian Revolution. But that ideology is at the heart of everything communist in the world. And Marxism-Leninism is, of course, the most evil, really, the most evil regime in the last centuries. I mean, Hitler was obviously bad with his fascist Nazism, but communism has much more durability because it's built on an ideology that basically promises people an ideal world, a utopia. As Engels put it, it's think about people in need. They would gravitate towards somebody who offers a utopia in the present rather than someone who offers the kingdom of heaven in the, sometime in the future after death. Yeah. So this is the Cain-Abel dynamic coming right up into the present time.
Yeah, in fact, yeah, it is that vision that the communism offers that has attracted so many or misled so many people throughout the world. I think, you know, at the end of the Cold War, when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, there was a kind of a relief and people thought, hey, this is over. But now we see a resurgent China. You have a chapter on China. It highlights, I think, the revival of Marxism-Leninism under Xi Jinping. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, well, as you're saying, you know, people hoped when the Soviet Union sort of collapsed in on itself that that was the end of Marxism. Obviously, the Chinese Communist Party was not affected and has only gone from strength to strength, really. Unfortunately, with the assistance of the West, a kind of naive West that fails to recognize the nature of the regime for what it is. So, you know, obviously some of the most foolish moves have been, for example, the, you know, accepting them into the World Trade Organization, investing hundreds of billions of dollars into their economy, which of course has made China a more powerful enemy than the Soviet Union ever was. The Soviet leaders, I believe, always clung to Marxist ideology, which of course never worked. It just doesn't work. It's not a economically sound theory. Whereas the Chinese under Deng adjusted to incorporate capitalism into their system, admittedly a kind of crony capitalism tied to the government. Nevertheless, capitalism, and that's what saved the Chinese Communist Party. And clearly today, they are the biggest external threat to the world. But at the same time, the Marxist ideology, which has metastasized into other sort of neo-Marxist doctrines like the Frankfurt School, Wilhelm Reich, Herbert Marcuse, and then the postmodernists like Michel Foucault and Jacques Didier, who were responsible for the whole woke culture we face today, is undermining our Western civilization and absolutely turning our values upside down, destroying our value system.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. In the VOC podcast, I make the point that the ultimate core evil of communism is its atheism, its denial of God. In the China chapter, you talked about the destruction of faiths under communism. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, it's kind of remarkable, and you've probably noticed this as well, how much acceptance the Chinese have won despite their actual practices at home. I mean, the estimates of the people who have been killed under this regime varies from about 55 million to about 80 million, which is the Epoch Times estimate. And how did those people die? They died by the Communist Party stripping away the traditions of China, the Confucianism, the Taoism, the Buddhism, and forcing people to accept their Marxist ideology. And today, of course, that has continued with their persecution of the Uyghurs, the persecution of the Falun Gong, the incomprehensibly barbaric, you know, practice of organ harvesting, for example. They're continuing these things. So this regime that people are trying to normalize our relationships with is bloodstained. It has the blood of 80 million of its own people on its hands. And yet we still take them seriously. It's really incomprehensible.
Yeah, it's really a failure of kind of a morality in the West. You touched on this a little bit, but one of the chapters you have is on the struggle between good and evil in history. Go a little further on that and then wrap it up. Tell us, what is the triumph of good? How will good ultimately triumph over evil?
Yes, well, this struggle, as I was describing somewhat in the more recent time, can be seen, for example, in if you contrast the French Revolution, which was classist, a lower class trying to depose the upper class, compared to the American Revolution, which drew in people from all classes, the intellectuals, the educated class, but also the common people were engaged in that because it had real virtue, it had real purpose that was good for the world. And so this is the able type trend that is running parallel to the Cain type trend in history. So really we're in a battle between good and evil. I mean, personally, I see this playing itself out in Ukraine right now, because if you look at the Russian behavior in this war, it's purely Cain-like. And although they've officially disposed of communism, think about the people running the country. Putin and the other leaders are from the FSB, formerly the KGB. Their ideology, doctrine, and behavior is somewhat communist and somewhat fascist, but together is totalitarian. So their aggression in Ukraine is purely and totally Cain-like in nature. So, you know, the history of the Cold War is a history of compromise based on Kenner's theory of containment, compromise with Marxism and communism. So that's wrong. That's a problem. Trying to contain evil doesn't work. It never works. You have to defeat evil. And I think this really came to a point in Korea when Truman adopted Kenner's theory and stopped short of recapturing the North Korean territory. Both MacArthur and Clark advocated for a continued campaign until we had won the North again by bombing the bridges over the Yellow River. So I think that compromise there, that containment at that point, became the pattern for the whole Cold War. So Vietnam, we lost Vietnam. Contest after contest, we would back down under the sort of assumption that we could not win. So I think this is what has to change. This is what has to be a change in our mentality, the recognition that evil must be completely defeated. So if you think about our relationship today with China or with the other bad actors in the world, with Iran, with Hamas, which, by the way, you can see the same Cain-type attitude in their behavior, resentful, bitter, and ultimately murderous. So we have to have the resolve to defeat these evil forces. So I believe the triumph of good will come when we recognize what it is and that we must become part of the campaign to achieve it. Good is never imposed. That's why we've had a history of thousands of years of evil struggling against good, up and down, coming and going, success and failure. And that's exactly the situation today. So I think in terms of policy, in terms of foreign policy, we have to be absolutely clear about where we stand. This doesn't mean that we become policemen of the world, not at all. But it means that we're clear in policy, and then we mobilize our resources accordingly. So that's the main thing. And in terms of domestic policy, we absolutely have to do away with this woke culture, this Marxist, neo-Marxist culture, which is literally destroying our society, starting with our children, as we can all see through transgenderism, through these really corrupt and evil agendas.
Yeah. We've been talking with Thomas Cromwell. He's author of the book, The Triumph of Good, Divine Providence, The Cain-Abel Paradigm, and The End of Marxism. Thomas, how can people get the book, and where can they find your other work on social media or the internet?
The book is available on Amazon and through bookstores. Generally, my books are on my own website, which is eastwestpublishing.org.
Great. We'll have to leave it there. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this episode of Victory Over Communism. Please tune in again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to Victory Over Communism with award-winning national security journalist Bill Gertz, the only program in the free world unafraid to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how the Communist Party of China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. See you next time on Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.